This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here today at the Defence Academy of the United Kingdom, where we have an event going on looking at autism. I'm here with Emily, who's going to tell us more about it.
Hi, my name is Emily Sviontek. I work for the National Autistic Society and I'm an employment training consultant.
Autism is a difficult subject for a lot of people. We see a lot about it in the press. How do we take away the stigma?
At the moment at the National Autistic Society, we're doing a lot of work to take away some of the stigma associated with autism. We recently launched a campaign called Too Much Information, and as part of that we're wanting to raise awareness across the whole of the public. And what we've seen is that actually a lot of people know what autism is, but they don't really know what that means. So by doing things like virtual reality, we've made some great videos, getting out and talking to people and just raising the profile of autism, what we're hoping to do is change some of that public opinion on autism is just somebody being naughty. Actually, no, it's not somebody being naughty, it's somebody being autistic and having a brain that's set up in a different way to maybe other people's might be.
We hear a lot about different types of autism, and I think for a lot of people they don't understand the differences between them. Could you give us some idea of what the spectrum is and how that applies?
Autism is a spectrum condition, and that means that it manifests quite differently for different people. The common phrase that you hear a lot with this is when you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism, which can be quite frustrating to hear, but is very, very true. I think the reason for that is autism doesn't exist just within a vacuum. Obviously, people on the spectrum are humans, and therefore they have human traits and human personalities, and that influences what their autism looks like. You also might have somebody on the spectrum who's got an additional learning disability at a moderate to severe level, which may impact what their autism looks like as well. I think of it almost as different flavours of autism, but you have those same criteria, so difficulties with social communication and interaction and flexibility of thought that unite everybody and that sort of run through the myriad of different forms that autism can take.
One of the common perceptions of autism is films like Rain Man, where people look at these and they think, that's what autistic people are about. That's obviously not true. Not everybody's very high functioning, but similarly not everybody has massive learning disabilities and troubles. How do we widen the engagement so that people begin to approach people who have autism just as if they're another person, rather than, oh, you have a disability?
There's a few really interesting things to pick up on there. Like, absolutely, not everybody is like Rain Man. So I'm autistic myself, and I'm really bad at maths. I'm shocking at maths, in fact, and my only special ability is that I can tell you everything about Arsenal players and their dogs, which is completely useless in the real world. So that's definitely a misconception that we're working very, very hard to change. One of the other ones you commonly get is all autistic people are men. Absolutely not. I'm definitely not a man. I am 100% a woman. And the other thing that we see is the idea of high functioning, and it's actually a term that we're trying to move away from a little bit now, because I think it can be a real misnomer. So I might be classed as high functioning because I have a job and I am talking to you on this podcast. But what you don't see is that when I'm dealing with sensory issues, maybe when I'm on the train home from this event, my functioning, my ability to cope will become much more decreased. So I think it's about that real raised awareness for the public of what autism is, and some of that is by giving autistic voices more of a chance to be heard. Some of it is through campaigns like the Too Much Information campaign, and some of that is through employment. So having employers who are willing and open and are saying, yep, we're going to actively engage with the autistic community that we have in our workforces and that we want to bring in because we see the skills and talents they have.
How do we get employers to understand their responsibility and what they can do here? If they think of a disability, they tend to think almost all the time of a physical disability. They can identify it, they can look at their office building, they can adapt for somebody. When it comes to autism, sometimes no real outward sign until you're working with somebody. As you said, sometimes a sensory overload creates a moment. What is it that employers have got to do to better educate themselves and prepare both them and their workforce?
So I think there can be a lot of fear for employers around autism, partially because they maybe don't know what autism is, and partially because some of the traditional images that we've seen of autism have presented one style of autism. But I think increased training and awareness, a lot of my job is going out and working with employers and colleagues who are wanting to understand employment of autistic people and how they can do that. So whether that's, okay, how do we actively recruit somebody autistic? Probably not going to start looking for the enthusiastic team players. Again, a stereotype. I'm quite enthusiastic, but for a lot of people it might be off-putting. And then awareness raising. Actually, a lot of the adjustments might be that the employer needs to change how they communicate. That can be quite different to general disability awareness within work, where we're saying, okay, well, we'll make just an adjustment and then you'll get on as it was. Some of it is more of a change in how you approach things. Giving an instruction really clearly would be one thing that an employer might want to look at and change. What I do find is when I go and I start working with employers, I deliver some training, we do a project to do some active recruitment. Once they meet their autistic employee, once they've got the training and built their confidence up, things can go so much better, because instead of having the employer almost speaking one language and the autistic employee speaking another, they're able to be on the same page.
What sort of things do you do in the training?
The training that we do really focuses on raising awareness and understanding of what autism is for managers. That's not just, okay, here's some diagnostic criteria, off you go. It's looking at real case studies and stories and sharing those in a way that makes sense. So often employers will feel like, maybe I'm alone, maybe nobody's had an autistic employee and got it wrong. Actually, that's not the case. There's often been case studies of other people or situations we've dealt with where an employer hasn't communicated in a way that's worked for their autistic employee. By sharing those, that builds some of the confidence. And then the other part of the training is really dedicated to building strategies. How can an autistic manager, an autistic colleague, effectively communicate with an autistic employee? What are some of the management strategies that they need? It's often quite opposite to our traditional management practice that we've got now, which is very hazy and easy breezy and, hey, I'm available all the time. Doesn't always work for your autistic employees. So it's really about equipping and building people up to manage confidently.
What about understanding the issues for that employee? Because, as you said, the issues will vary from person to person, as they do with anybody, but they tend to be exacerbated when somebody's having an incident. Is that the right word, an incident?
Generally, we would refer to a few different things. So it might be that somebody's experiencing increased stress. It might be that they are experiencing a meltdown or a shutdown, and they often come at a point where that stress has increased, and then somebody isn't quite able to cope with that at that moment. And it might be due to sensory issues. It might be due to really, really high levels of anxiety within work. Sometimes, sadly, things can hit what we would call a crisis point, which is where somebody's really struggling in work. Within those, there's so many things that an employer can do, but the main thing is to get to know their employee and understand what works for their individual employee. You know, I could list 1,000 different strategies, but ultimately if you don't get to know and understand your employee and what works for them, it's not going to work. And that might mean a bit of creative thinking. Sometimes an autistic person will have really amazing skills and abilities at the technical aspects of their job, but they might not be as good at the social aspects. They might not remember to ask how your weekend was. And those small things within an office environment, within a business environment, can really easily lead to misunderstanding. So if an employer knows, okay, right, Bob is never going to ask me how my weekend was, doesn't mean he doesn't like me, it's just that he's autistic and that doesn't naturally come into his realm of things to ask me about. Those small adjustments, the small changes to communication and expectation, can make a real difference to somebody's success. At the moment, only 16% of autistic people are in full-time employment, which I think is a really shocking statistic. And actually, if we had increased awareness and understanding within employment, not just in cybersecurity, obviously a fantastic realm, but we see people going into the arts and all sorts of things, I would be rubbish in cybersecurity. If we build that awareness and understanding with employers, if employers don't feel scared and afraid of getting things wrong, and they're equipped with some of the skills and knowledge that they need, then I think we could see that 16% figure change really dramatically.
As well as the basic fear from employers, do you often find some of them are concerned about cost? Do you think that becomes part of the reason why they don't engage?
So I don't think that that's something we've necessarily come across in the research that we've been doing. A lot of it has come down to lack of awareness, lack of understanding, or down to autistic people not being able to access the opportunities in ways that work for them. So maybe a job description is written in a really vague and hazy way, or maybe the interview expects a phone call beforehand, and the person's anxiety level just mean that they don't go through with it or they don't do particularly well. So we've seen it's more around actually the access into the roles and how to recruit positively, and the awareness and understanding side. That's generally where we've seen the difficulties to be.
How do we change that conversation to getting them access to the jobs? For example, go along to a job centre and it can be tough for anybody, let alone somebody who may suddenly experience sensory overload in that environment. As you say, the language doesn't help a lot of the time. Is there a better way to get employers perhaps to file jobs through yourselves, where you can push them out to people you're aware of, or just change the way they look for jobs? They've already started to take the need for a degree off of a lot of things. They've already started to change where they do interviews. How much is that helping, and what else can be done?
So we do a lot of work with employers who are looking to change their recruitment practices. We do a whole piece of training on autism-specific recruitment, and we also do more developed consultancy. So we've been working with some really interesting businesses recently. I've just been working on a piece with Procter & Gamble, which is not cybersecurity at all, but they've identified within their Gillette factory and their innovations team that there's a lot of autistic people out there who are really creative thinkers and who are fantastic in those technical skills, so coding, engineering, 3D computer design, all of those sorts of things, but might not have your traditional employment routes because they've not been able to go through the school system in a traditional way because they're autistic. So as part of that, we're looking at doing a paid work experience placement as the initial thing. And the interview for that wasn't a one-to-one sit down, okay, tell me about why you'd be good at this job. Imagine you've got to engineer something, what could that be like? It was practical, it was experiential. It was a whole day of going through, right, what would engineering in this organisation look like? Try some activities related to that. Doing things that are a little bit more creative, a little bit more cerebral, can be a really fantastic option. Through to, we've worked with other organisations who have not had to go that innovative, that's a very, very innovative piece of work, who've worked with us to look at, right, okay, how do we change our job spec? How do we target people? Can we use the National Autistic Society or people that we're related to access networks? And we've done that with some of our partners to just develop the relationship and say, look, we're autism friendly. One of the things we're really keen to start building is the idea of autism friendly employers. So we recently launched an award, and what we want to do with that award is to sort of accredit employers as saying, yep, we are committed to being autism friendly. We've gone through training, we've looked at our recruitment processes, we will do everything we can to support you. And I think that if I was looking for a job and I saw autism friendly employer on the application, I'd be like, yep, brilliant, sending you my CV straight away.
Once they're into work, you mentioned something that was very interesting, in that they don't go through the general routes when they get in a company. They're not often pushy, they're not going to be wanting to be promoted, they're just happy doing their job. How challenging is that for an employer to actually spot that employee who's very good and promote them? Because often there's a tendency in companies that when you've got somebody who's really good in a position, try and leave them alone.
There's two challenges, really, for autistic employees and autistic employers with this one, and also benefits. So we often say that autistic employees can be very, very loyal. They'll often have a real sense of commitment. Sadly, jobs for life don't really exist anymore, but when they did exist, there were a lot of undiagnosed autistic people working within those roles. They really, really suited them. And some people will be really happy with that. I've worked with a lot of people who have done that one role. It is perfectly suited to them. They do something that they love and they enjoy every day, and actually being promoted would be a nightmare for them because it would take them away from the thing that they love. I mean, they have to start doing lots of other things. But that obviously comes with downsides, which is that person's probably going to be on lower pay than their peers, because they may stay in that same job. And one of the pieces of research we did as part of the recent Too Much Information campaign saw that a lot of autistic people feel they are underemployed compared to their peers. So then that creates that other challenge, which is, what's the first thing that happens when you're promoted within work? You're given management. That is traditionally what is happening. And the technical promoting has started to die out a little bit. So go back a few years, people could be promoted for their technical skill. Maybe you have to take on more project management, but you're promoted on your technical skill. You're not given that management ability. So something that I think is a real challenge for employers is, how do you promote your autistic workforce? Because there are a lot of ambitious autistic people out there. I am an ambitious autistic person. I hope to have a long and successful career doing what I do. There's a challenge there as well, because I know I wouldn't necessarily be a great manager, because as chatty and as friendly as I am, I don't always have the nuanced social skills that are required to be a brilliant manager. That said, there are also autistic managers out there who do great jobs. So I think it's always about working with the individual and to some extent breaking down some of the patterns perspective that we've got on just how we do things as a employer, and working then to look at the more creative options for promoting somebody within work.
If I look at large companies, they've tried to rationalise their salaries into bands. That job has a top and a bottom salary range. If you want to be paid more, you must take on different types of responsibility. It falls into that problem you've just identified. It's no good somebody being absolutely fantastic and you pay them for their skills and what they generate to the company. But if I then look at a lot of startups and new businesses coming in, I find a very different approach. They're much more orientated about the people in the company. They have big corporate social responsibility goals as to what they want to do moving forwards. The money's not just about profit for them and for shareholders. Are you finding when you go out there and you engage with employers, there's a difference between large companies and new companies in the market? Or is the challenge that you're facing pretty much the same across everybody?
I think for us, we see a real willingness actually across the board to engage and to start to develop more autism-friendly recruitment practices, regardless of the size of business. I think in the last few years, autism has received a lot more media coverage, which is fantastic. The awareness of it is increasing. And what we're really seeing is that, you know, we work with very, very big multinational corporations through to your small business. And at all those levels, we're seeing a real willingness to engage, to try and do something. Obviously, that's not to say there aren't challenges. There are, and I think we've still got a long way to go. But we're seeing a real positive atmosphere, really, around autism and employment. And my hope is that that just continues to increase on an upward spike.
Emily, thank you for your time today. This has been a brilliant interview, and I've learned things already.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for having me.